And we'll go into our last hour here. I can't believe it's here already. Our guest, Dr. John J. Harper, talking about solar cycle 24 and how it is that we could survive. How bad could it get? What can we be prepared for? And how is it this ties in with the ancient Mayan prophecies as well as a sense of evolving consciousness? What is our leg up at this near disastrous time, if it is as cataclysmic as Dr. John J. Harper believes it could be? We'll find out where you are with that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, let's start west of the Rockies where Sean is in Pittsburgh, and he's hanging on for Dr. John J. Harper. Before we get there, let me just say, Sean, I'm sorry about the Steelers today. I don't know if you're a football fan, but that was a tough loss. So sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. Am I here now?
Yeah, you are. Your question for Dr. Harper.
I'll tell you what. Well, first of all, I mean, a 31-29 loss for the Steelers. Living in Pittsburgh, never really lived there, but once you live here, I'll tell you what, you kind of turn against the team because of the fans. They're like a cult. It's crazy, but we'll get right to the point here.
Well, I guess it's a little bit like a solar flare came early, though, for the Steelers, the way they melted down there in that last quarter. But go ahead.
Well, They tried. They tried to come back. But anyways, Ian, I wanted to say I really like what you said, man. You know, a host like yourself on Coast to Coast talking about what can we do to prepare for solar activity such as what Dr. Harper is talking about. You know, I liked how you said, can we just go in a basement or whatever? I really think that needs to be established. And that's what basically my question is.
Okay.
I mean, how severe, Dr. John Harper, do you really think? Do you really think that we're going to bake on the earth? Perhaps. Is it possible? And what could the average Joe out there, somebody that's making, let's say, minimum wage, I mean, what could they do that they don't really, they say they're behind on rent, they can't really afford things. What would your advice be to somebody in those kind of shoes?
I think probably the most practical way to answer your question is the same thing that I would do in terms of working with civil defense in my community. You know, we're basically talking about kind of a nuclear type event, right? A solar nuclear type event. So it seems to me that the same facilities that our communities have set aside for civil defense in terms of warfare would now, you know, become very necessary if NASA, for example, started becoming so concerned that they started issuing the same types of alerts that they do for severe weather. And spaceweather.com, by the way, is a place for everyone to go to. There's also solarcycle24.com. That's a good source of information, and that is the most direct way to answer your question. Civil defense and our local political agencies, the mayors and city councils, et cetera, I think someone should at least bring it up and make them aware that this is a possibility. Send them to the science sites. Let them get familiar with the NASA predictions themselves.
Sure. Yeah, okay. I think that's really the key thing is the NASA predictions. And, you know, it's hard to argue when it's, when it's NASA, that comes with a lot of built-in credibility.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Okay, very good. And let's see, let me get to Carrie. She's got a thought west of the Rockies in San Pedro on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. John J. Harper. Carrie?
Hello, fellas. This is a great show. I've very much enjoyed listening to it. Ian, I want to kind of springboard off of what you mentioned earlier as far as petitioning God or Allah or whoever you want to call the creator for intervention in something that seems to be an inherently natural process. And my question for the doctor is, as far as consciousness that you're talking about, something that comes hand in hand with consciousness would be eternal life, whether you were the Mayans or whether you're a Christian, a Muslim, anybody today. That's one idea that seems to unify all religious outlooks, is that idea of eternal life. And what happens after this? And what is this? This world that we experience right now, what is this as far as what we really are? And I guess the idea of having fear for these things escapes me. You know, I being microwaved on the surface of the planet, it seems like something to be frightening, but when you realize that there is no death, that the idea of you ending is not real. When you realize that there, you know, that there's an element of eternal life that is part of who you are, there's nothing to fear.
Well, I have a thought on that, but let's hear what Dr. John J. Harper would have to say first. So hang on there, Kerry. Go ahead.
Thank you, Kerry. That is a wonderful summation of basically where I'm at myself. I started out very fearful, and I've ended up very comforted with the idea that I think I understand enough of what's going on in solar cycle 24 and how it's going to really bring about a massive transformation in consciousness. So there's this upside to this upheaval. But, you know, to reflect on the idea that we're immortal beings, I think is the key that will probably come to the forefront. In other words, when we're confronted with our mortality, so to speak, this gives us a great opportunity to get it together quickly. And I see these crises as really, the Chinese would say, as opportunities. And I see where chaos could actually lead to new order in terms of how we perceive our connection to the environment. And so I'm very, very optimistic overall.
But Kerry, I have to ask you, if you have no fear of that, and if that doesn't particularly bother you, the end of the world as we know it, or a solar flare coming and gobbling you up, why would you ever try to get well after you're sick? Why would you eat well? Why would you exercise? Why would you do anything if this life is just such a sort of a meaningless place to pass through?
No, see, that's exactly the opposite. The way I don't think that this is meaningless. I think that the number one most astounding thing to me is the idea that we were created for the purpose of being loved.
That's right.
This is my personal, you know, spiritual take on it.
Right.
But the free will that comes with that is recognition of the facts that we don't end, that we don't stop. And it's not a fatalistic view at all. I don't think that, you know, that you shouldn't try to get well, because I think part of that wellness in you is appreciating the fact that you've been given the gifts that we, each person on the face of this planet, each life form, everything, the fact that this universe exists, appreciating that. But
then stop right there. I think that's just why people would, that answers your question to me on why other people would fight so hard about preserving life too. I think that I understand it brings you comfort to think that we will be absorbed into a greater energy and that there is more to this life. And I think that's terrific. But I think that answers why other people would, and why they would, they don't look at this, they do look at this with a great amount of fear, because they want to try to preserve this life. Just like one might look at fear in terms of respect. That's why I think a lot of folks would be trying to resist it and trying to survive it, is fear as in respect. But I appreciate your point of view on that. Let me get to Ratman, who is in Philly on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. John J. Harper.
Hey, good morning. A very fine topic for the first Sunday of 2008.
You don't sound like a Ratman.
I'm glad I come off as a more positive person.
Okay. You're talking
but
with Dr. John J.
Harper. It's two of the three syllables of my real last name.
Got it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, and it's a fine pseudonym, at least for the radio show.
Okay.
Hey, Dr. Harper.
Yes.
Might it be that either Mars or Venus represent prior kill shot experiences, and we humans somehow got to observe that early in our mythology?
I guess that anything's possible. You know, Venus is the planet that's mapped by the Mayans and the Egyptians as being very important to our spiritual evolution. And, of course, Venus has always been the planet of love, right? And so Christ himself was linked with this bright morning star. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of astrology involved in this entire solar cycle 24 that might very well open this Pandora's box, if you will, in terms of this ancient wisdom that I think will have to come into general discussion pretty soon in theology. So, yes, anything is theoretically possible.
Just to make the point, of course, but the morning star, of course, is also linked to Lucifer.
Yes.
Okay.
Being of light. Yes.
Yeah. Well, and specifically the morning star, the Luxus, the origin of the term. Tambra is hanging on in New Orleans on Coast to Coast AM, a New Orleans that may not be here in about 24 months. Tambra?
Yes.
If all the melting happens that's supposed to happen, you might want to think about moving inland a little bit.
Well, I'll take Major Ed Dane's advice and move at least 60 miles inland.
Okay.
But
right.
Gentlemen, Dr. Harper and Ian, it's a pleasure to speak to Coast again. And again, I'm going to bring up the book that I've read before by Barbara Hand Clow called The Pleiadian Agenda.
Okay.
And in it, Satya is in the Alcyone Library, the Alcyone planet of the Pleiadian star system. There is the Pleiadians, Assyrians, and the Mayans. Assyrians are influential in Egypt, the Mayans in South America, and the Pleiadians look at us through a kaleidoscopic, multidimensional type of a viewpoint because they have to travel so far to view us. And what Satya channeled through Barbara Hand Clow in 1994 in the pyramids, and it's on videotape, is that when the solar system comes completely into the galactic photon band, because on each side of the photon band is the galactic night. The last era was the age of Leo, the last ice age. This current age coming up is exiting Pisces into Aquarius.
Okay.
And what they say is that we're going through a resonance vibration.
Resonance. Hey, Tambra, I'm gonna grab the wheel back from you here because I don't see how this is intersecting with the guest.
Okay.
So I want to cut to that part, okay?
Can I just say one more thing?
As long as it's not another minute-long speech,
quick.
Go ahead.
Satya says that we are going to vibrate, and we have to release all our negative karma, and we are going to transmute and transcend, and we're actually going to become blue. And I know it's not very esoteric, but this is what she states, and it's a book I recommend everybody read, and I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Tambra. That's good. And there we go. We got it in there, and you got all your information in there. Let me get to Pramil. I believe I'm pronouncing that right, in Fresno for Dr. John J. Harper. Is that right, Pramil?
Hi, hello. Hello, Ian and Dr. Harper. I just want to make a suggestion because, Ian, you asked earlier, what can we do as far as prayer? What kind of group should we be associated with? And I'm thinking of Greg Braden, who's going to be, I heard, the guest tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we should go with Ian, like Greg Braden suggests, and we should use mass consciousness to really be co-creators. And I also read that right now 50% of creation is up to us. You know, we are the co-creators of not only of our life, but if we pull together, we create this massive toroid that can actually affect even in the sub-nuclear level, just like what Dr. John Hagelin was explaining, that things change.
Okay. Well, I'd be interested to hear whether Greg Braden has anything to say on this, and I'll have to be listening coming up because you're right. He is on tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. And when I saw that, I was jealous because I always love having Greg Braden on for myself. But tell me, you heard what he had to say there, Dr. John J. Harper. Where are you with that?
Well, I'm very familiar with Greg Braden, and he and I have talked in years past, and I know for a fact that this is coming to the consciousness of the general population in terms of belief systems with, like, Dr. Bruce Lipton and intentions and with, Lynn McTaggart's work on the field, and also so many scientists now realize that we are connected in the field of consciousness, this Princeton project, the global, project, global mind idea is Peter Russell, the global brain, is really catching on. And it's because the physics is starting to catch up with the metaphysics. And I've been there for a number of years because I've had personal experiences of this larger mind field. So when I speak, I try to be conservative, but I know that there's a larger mind that one can access, and it is a very real experience. It is phenomenal, to say the least. I'll tell you, though, it takes a great deal of adjustment, and I wouldn't want to be in that state of consciousness when I'm driving down the interstate.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally get that. And again, we're talking about the coming solar cycle 24. Carl is in Milwaukee, and we're all just kind of coming to grips with the possibilities of what this might mean. Carl?
Yes.
It's already begun. You're talking with Dr. John J. Harper.
Yes. My question for Dr. Harper is that if we were to ready ourselves for this oncoming onslaught from the sun, how would we prepare any structures that we would have ourselves other than the self-defense?
Yeah. Like any foil type of a roof? Or, I mean, honestly, if it's really coming and it's going to be this bad, I'm with Carl. Is there anything that we can construct that would keep it at least minimize it?
I can tell you what I've done, and I think it's probably just to massage my own mind. I've actually taken the deck. I have a large deck system on the back of my home here in the city of Spokane. And what I did was I actually poured about a 6 feet concrete pad on top of the old wood. Now, it's structurally sound. I built it myself over a number of years. And so underneath that structure, that's where my hydroponics, my grow rooms, as I call them now, where I'm growing vegetables and et cetera, experimenting with different hydroponic systems. But the point is that I believe that would offer a minimal level of the direct impact of the radiation. However, I do not believe that we really can prepare in that sense unless, again, we have access to either civil defense or underground facilities. And then you have to calculate what is the realistic odds of that particular coronal mass ejection, or that part busting through the magnetosphere on a planet that's spinning at 1,000 miles, per hour, rotating on its axis every 24 hours. What is the realistic idea that would strike you? Now, 75% of the planet is water. So, you just keep going through that scenario. I would say, your odds of winning the lotto are a lot greater than being struck by a coronal mass ejection.
Just the worst case scenario, though, I'm buying a crowbar. Because I'm figuring I can get one of these manholes up off the street, and I don't care. I mean, if there's one that's coming, I'll head down underneath the street.
Manning, you are a really deep thinker. That's great.
I don't think so. That's just that's the shortest distance between point A and point B here.
Get your mind out of the gutter.
Yeah, there's no cave for me to go to. So it's either that or SPF 9000. Hey, now, real quickly, though, the good news for this, though, is if there were more solar flares or if there were more of this activity that would be coming to Earth, it would seem the species that would be most at peril would be birds. And it might have a way of, I mean, if you were really concerned about the avian flu, that it might have a way of knocking out the birds that would be carrying the bird flu. So one hand might actually wash the other. What do you think?
Yeah, I am open. I really think there are always 10 solutions to every problem, and because I believe in the consciousness of the Earth, that Gaia, Mother Earth, is an extremely intelligent being who is absolutely bent on survival, and that will to live trickles down to us. I really sense that what we need to do is become aware of this connectivity and then plan our daily lives accordingly and interact with one another like it really does matter.
Okay, because I think it does.
And, it does.
And we'll pick it up here then. Our last half hour, we'll get to everybody lined up. We'll shoot you the number so that you can have a chance to join in the conversation with Dr. John J. Harper, Solar Cycle 24. It has begun. Scientists are recognizing it at an increasing rate around the country. They're seeing the solar activity that was predicted to have started as late as spring of 2008 has already begun, and it might peak in 2011 with some pretty catastrophic consequences for us. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. End of this last half hour of Open Lines with our guest. Getting to as many of your questions and comments for Dr. John J. Harper as we're talking about the coming solar cycle 24. Most of the scientists Dr. Harper's been referencing believe it's already begun. It started a little earlier than had originally been predicted, and it could be as bad as the end of civilization as we know it, with just the planets lining up just wrong, we might have the come about of the Mayan calendar after all, sometime around the year 2011, when the solar cycle is expected to peak. Your questions, your comments on that next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. We'll get it started east and the west of the Rockies with Mike in North Carolina for Dr. John J. Harper on Coast to Coast AM. Mike?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. My name is Mike. I'm from North Carolina, from the Cleveland County, Gaston County area. I've been listening to your program for years and years, predominantly since the year 1995, when I saw something very strange in the sky, and I explained it to my family, and of course everybody thought I was kooks. All through the years that I've listened through to Coast to Coast, I find it's a very enigmatic, proportioned, scientific-based channel that I've listened to, and I'm very thankful
glad
for
to have you.
Program.
Glad to have you. Now, what do you think of this?
Okay, this is, I've got several questions, 25 words or less. I'm trying to put it in perspective. The death ray I've been hearing about for the last, I've been hearing this over a period of approximately 10 years on this program. And I've been listening to a lot of prophetic angles that a lot of the guests and a lot of the people have talked about, and I'm predominantly Christian by just by general faith. That's my general belief.
Okay.
And I believe in the scriptures. I'm 55 years of old. I've seen everything from A to Z. I'm listening to this term of the Mayan calendar, the predictions and the dates. Through the years of going through the colleges and the schools, I've been hearing that when the Spanish conquistadors arrived in the Mayan civilization, that they destroyed a lot of the secret texts and books that the Mayans had. And I was just wondering if part of this was reported from the documentations that that these Mayan shamans may have had, and as to the leading up to the ways that they found out about these predictions of the year 2012.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a breath and go ahead and get Dr. John J. Harper on that. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, there's a number of ways to look at this. John Major Jenkins basically came to a conclusion after a good lifetime of looking at this 2012 end date. He believes it's a shift in consciousness, that there's going to be a global awakening of mind, and that the end date is really not about a geophysical event per se, but the way that some of this information was handed down is both through storytelling or mythology, but it's also, the Azteca sunstone. Now, that's interesting. The sunstone calendar has been decoded by many mythologists, scientists, actually. I mean, these are folks that look at this from a very objective standpoint. Now, they don't make predictions about any type of end-time scenario, but when you talk to the daykeepers, the shamans that some of them have come forward, like Kungbut's Men, for example, comes to mind, but there's many others. Berrios talks about this idea that the imbalance now is the key, the idea that the Earth, the magnetic signature, if you will, of the Earth, the natural resources have been depleted to the point that we're going to see a huge shift in geophysical cataclysms towards the bad side, because the Earth wants to get back in balance. In other words, back in alignment with the sun, back in alignment with the center core of the Milky Way galaxy. So real quickly, that's the point. There's both physical evidence, the pyramids, for example, and what they mean, pyramids of the sun, and the sunstone calendar of the Aztecs. And then this personal storytelling is very important, I believe, to look at, too. And that's, of course, what I did in my book.
We may have entered into a solar cycle 24 early. I've noticed one early effect here on the air is that people have lengthened all of their preambles before they get to their question.
And yeah.
I don't know if that's a solar cycle thing or not, but that's the only thing I'm making a connection to. Let me get to Samantha for Dr. John J. Harper. Samantha?
Yes, hi, and I will try and make this very quick. It's a pleasure to talk to both of you.
Thank you.
What I wanted to say is I feel that we are already experiencing the magnetic effects with such diseases as fibromyalgia with 6 million people. No one knows about it. You're just starting to hear about it. I was born knowing that I was an immortal being of light in a meat body. I do not understand people's fear of this. We are already, I feel that the ultimate destruction that we are going to be looking at and the magnitude of it is unavoidable. And this is Gaia cleansing herself. We are already have 2.5 billion more people than this planet can manage. And I want to know what the doctor's opinion is in regards to that.
Well, I have mixed opinions because some of the folks that I've interviewed for my book on the near-death experience, they think we need more people on the planet. I've had one individual that kind of lines up with Dr. Peter Russell's idea of a global brain. We actually need 8 to 10 billion people to shift into the higher level of consciousness. Now, it's going to be interesting because it is push coming to shove. I mean, we can't have it both ways. Either we're going to survive in mass the 2012 event, whether it's a solar flare that does it or a pole shift or a bird flu pandemic or a combination of all three. That is my opinion, that we're going to see all three to a certain extent. So that's going to be interesting because if we pull together, I see where survival is possible in large numbers. If we don't, if food becomes what we kill each other over, then all bets are off as to, the positive scenario unfolding.
A very quick.
Oh, wait, sorry. I was just already putting her on hold when she said that, and I'm sorry about that. Didn't hear her going back for another question. Mark is in Arizona, first-time caller line for Dr. John J. Harper. Mark?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. I have a question for John. I actually want to make an answer to your question, Ian, about how many people would take to make a change in these events. And Greg Braden mentions in his book, The Divine Matrix, that the minimum number of people to jumpstart a change in consciousness is the square root of 1% of a population, which works out to about 7,000 people or so of this planet.
Well, that would seem pretty easy to do, though, on a show like Coast to Coast.
Yeah, I would think so.
I mean, we could do that in one night. We would think we'd be able to fix that.
Right. My question to John is, how does Hawaii fit into this whole thing? Because it is a volcanic island, though it's not in the Ring of Fire. It is, in fact, a unique volcano, unlike anything else on the planet. Also being that it's 2,000 miles in all directions from anything in the middle of the deepest ocean on Earth. I'm curious how that would be affected. And in light of the fact that there's this overwhelming energy of aloha, which is basically love, that's been affecting.
That's a really good question, and especially in light of the $1 million for a small parcel of land on a beach, which could disappear rather quickly. Dr. Harper, where are you with Hawaii?
Well, I think that what we're looking at is tremendous upheaval on the ocean floor, and I don't think it's going to take very many ruptures of subduction zones and tectonic plates to trigger enough tsunamis to cover many of these South Pacific islands. We saw what happened in December 26, 2004 in Indonesia. I see many of those events happening because I see the planet realigning its magnetic and geophysical north pole again. I think that's what's going to rebalance the Earth and bring us back into a homeostatic position.
We've opened up all the lines for Dr. John J. Harper. I'll try to get to as many of them as I can here in the rest of the time we have. But let me ask you a question that a couple of people, I think, have hinted at throughout the evening. What if nothing happens? I mean, we've talked about all the things that could happen. What if nothing happens? And the solar cycle comes in, maybe there's occasional disruption of a cell phone signal, or, we go down, we lose, somebody doesn't have their tom-tom to get them directions to pick up a pizza or something. But nothing major happens. There is, maybe some more melting going on, but no American cities like New York City or New Orleans are submerged. What happens if 2013 comes in and it ends up being just, any other year?
From my perspective, based on nearly 20 years of looking at this, I would say I'll probably die of shock if nothing happens.
Okay.
That means that I am totally behind what I'm saying to you, and I could be totally wrong. However, I cannot disagree with the science, and then when I throw my personal experiences in and this quest, this vision quest, if you will, which never, ever in my wildest imagination would have anything to do with Mayans, Egyptians, or 2012 when I started, coming to you this morning and telling you that I do believe there is something cataclysmic going to happen. Again, I will die of shock if it doesn't happen to a certain degree. Do I believe this is the end of the world? No way. This is the end of the world as we know it.
Okay. But I mean, and I want you to imagine this with me. What happens with, and there's this sort of process that theologians call disconfirmation happens a lot right after a messianic movement doesn't.
Yes, absolutely.
Right, what the claims are, the apocalyptic event doesn't happen, and then there's something that's really interesting. There's something transformative that happens with that religious group that had pinned all of their hopes on a particular event or were expecting something that would validate their what they thought of as being absolute certainty of a divinely revealed, you know, event that was supposed to happen. So what do you think would happen to our society? What would happen to us as a people if nothing happened?
Probably the same thing that will happen if something does happen. We'll ultimately see that we're connected to the consciousness of the planet and the solar system and beyond. We'll just do it with a lot less pain and suffering. However, when you start looking at the ideas that NASA and others are throwing about, we can see that something very dramatic is happening in terms of the ecosystem, the extinction of species, for example. A lot of pressure points building up, the storms, the erratic weather, the oscillating cycles between El Niño and La Niña, for example, this heating and cooling. We're seeing that the Earth is out of balance energetically, and that can only lead to a rebalancing act. So again, what drives the weather systems? It's the sun, of course. And so if we look at this as a cleansing and purifying by fire and ice, as I do, in other words, I see global warming leading to global cooling and a little ice age, and I believe that there's absolutely no way that you can come out of this cul-de-sac without seeing crises emerge in terms of food and basic supplies being of paramount importance to 6 billion people on this planet.
All right. Let's get to Lynn in the Bay Area, wildcard line for Dr. John J. Harper on Coast to Coast AM. Lynn?
Hi, Ian. Good morning.
Morning.
It's great to talk to you. I love the way you interview. You always ask questions that I'm thinking, and I get answers.
Maybe I'm channeling you.
Well,
so
maybe
make sure
I'm channeling you.
Okay, but see, that'd be very scary. It means you have to listen every night that I'm on. Otherwise, I won't have any good questions.
Oh, I do.
I
really enjoy it. I know you're real short on time. I wanted to say hi, John. I've got your
hi.
Website up. And I have something real specific I wanted to talk to you about. Because
okay.
I've been real into this whole sun thing. I talked to Gina. I told her I'm on the West Coast in the Bay Area, and we just had a hurricane.
Okay? I understand.
Last night.
Right.
And I mean, we tied things down and the whole nine yards, and it was just, and we're having more coming. But even more interesting, as I told Gina, I'm a gardener. And when you work with the ground and you're around plants, you see them, and I noticed them. And starting way back, I'd say right around 95, so now we're going about 12 years ago, I started to notice odd things with the sun in the springtime. Like, it's only 75 degrees outside, but the sun is burning our skin and scalding the plants.
Yeah.
And I thought, maybe this is just an anomaly, but it doesn't feel so something's going on with the sun. And it was obvious already that something was going on as you were talking about the ecology and the animals and what have you. So many things are wrong. We've had whales that have come up the river here, and just they come into the bay. Just name it. It's odd. Things are not behaving normally. Bees aren't behaving normally. One of the things, the questions I wanted to ask really quickly, because I want someone else to get a chance to speak. Have you heard anything? Because I've seen these phases with the sun where there's the scalding of the plants. I had a botanist, because I do raise some exotic plants, who came up from Davis. And we're out there, and we were looking at some plants. And I said, you know, I think we better go inside. I said, can't you feel your skin burning? She says, but it's only 76 degrees.
Well, there has been a long discussion about global brightening. So let's pick it up there. And thank you, Lynn, for those kind thoughts. And Dr. John J. Harper.
Yes. Well, I've had this experience myself, in fact, where you're outside on a relatively cool day, and all of a sudden you realize you're being burnt. I've noticed this now for several years on and off. It's not a consistent every year event for me, at least here in Spokane, Washington. But I can tell you that it's resonance. What we're doing is, again, we're coupling to this energy resonantly, and that means you do not have to have a direct line hookup. And it's like tuning to a certain frequency, a given frequency, and all of a sudden you're connected, you're hot linked in, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, yes, that's the process I see where the major earth changes will happen. It's through a coupling event with the sun. It's not a direct hit, so to speak.
All right. John is in GR, Grand Rapids, Michigan, on Coast to Coast AM. John?
The burning and scalding, that's from extra reflection or absorption of ultraviolet radiation from the sun, not a frequency resonance. But this cycle, sun cycle, is 22-year cycle split up into two 11-year cycles. And we can trace this back all the way back to the 1850s when H. Schwab started studying sunspots. And nothing's going to happen here. This is a completely natural cycle of the sun. It's been traced and studied throughout many different variants in cores, earth samples, geologic records. And I think he's just trying to, the doctor, just trying to let mankind off for their effect on the environment. We're the ones that are ruining the ecosystem. Yeah, the sun affects the climate, but this solar cycle 24 does not explain for the past 50 years of global warming. So I'd like a better guess. Thanks.
Well, then we'll just end it right there on that.
Well, I think that this gentleman has got some good points, but I would direct his activity and his energy towards David Hathaway at Marshall Space Flight Center, and maybe they could have an interesting dialogue.
Well, I think that's a great start, too. And you aren't the only person that's focused on these solar cycles. It isn't just a Dr. John J. Harper thing. So I would look forward to continuing this conversation. I also think that it's something which I would like to revisit sometime in the future with you too, John, is what happens if nothing happens?
Wonderfully, and I love that discussion.
Okay, and we'll be listening to Greg Braden, who I have a feeling is going to pick up this conversation tomorrow night, too, as a guest on Coast to Coast AM. Happy New Year to you, John.
Happy New Year to everyone, and let's hope it's a real safe one.
Okay, well, I do that. Again, I hope you're wrong about these predictions, but I think it's always wise to keep an eye on the sky, too. Deus Tiamat, and I do, too.